You are listening to a podcast from the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace.
The list of global challenges could not be longer and could not be more complex. And to add to the difficulty, because these things never come easy, and to borrow the word from a famous Italian writer, the global governance system is kaput. And so it's not only a crisis of issues that we are facing, but it's also a crisis of the very institutions and process that have been built to solve those issues. So this is why today it is so interesting to hear Foreign Minister Frattini about the G8 priorities and also about the opportunities, because in any crisis you have opportunities for change and refoundation. Foreign Minister, the floor is yours. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Good afternoon. Thanks to you, Mr. Potier, for introducing me, and thanks for the presence of Mr. Tellis. I think the initiative organized by Carnegie in cooperation with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Italy is extremely important also to me, to have the opportunity to express with you some points of view that will characterize the Italian G8 presidency. Because in fact, our presidency takes place at a very delicate moment, which is characterized by two main elements, main factors, I would say. First one is the global crisis, and of course, I will come back to this later. And the second factor is, I would say, the fluidity of the structure of the international system. Because, for example, think about the role of emerging powers, the role which has increased. And the developing countries, think about particularly to African countries, are also legitimately calling for a bigger say in the management of the global agenda. What does that mean for our G8 presidency? Very simply, it means that we have to send a clear message in two main directions in order to, first of all, improve the effectiveness of the system of global governance. In other words, we need to give concrete responses to the most urgent problems, in particular the economic crisis. We also need to make the major stakeholders of international system more accountable. Effective governance implies that commitments are always met. And the second need is to improve the inclusiveness of the system of governance in order to make it more representative. And so this is why we consider that, for example, the traditional G8 model, is not finished. It's not coming to an end. But it should become more flexible. It should have the capacity to harmonize its working method, I would say, with the new system and with new needs that are emerging from the international scene. Think, first of all, about the need for coordination between G8 and G20, which is exactly the subject of the recent meeting that took place in Rome between my Prime Minister Berlusconi and the Prime Minister of UK, Mr. Brown. But of course, inclusiveness should go hand in hand with the responsibility. Emerging countries, which we do want to get involved closely and closely, should be associated to the decision-making process, but in return, and that's responsibility, they have to be ready to share the burden of global governance. We also call for a closer involvement of regional organizations in the system of global governance. That's why we plan, I think for the first time, maybe for the first time, we plan a meeting of all the regional organizations with the aim of seeking their closer involvement in the solution of global problems. Think about Africa. In Africa, there is African Union, but there is also Austrian African Association, there is a NAPAD, there is ECOWAS. Who is getting them involved? Who is granting to them, not to say about Asia or Latin America? I think for the first time we have to get all those who represent the efforts for integration of the regions in the world involved in the discussions. Otherwise, think about Europe, which is the most integrated continent in the world. At some times, some members of EU feel frustrated. They feel excluded. Think about Africa. Think about Latin America. That's why I think this exercise with the regional organization could prove extremely useful. And then, on this point, in today's multipolar and very complex world, we need to build up a broader axis of responsibility. This is also, for me, of course, the precondition to make an effective multilateralism work. It's not useful. It's absolutely useless to speak every day about effective multilateralism without seeking the best way to achieve it. Now, I will very briefly touch upon the main substantial priorities of our G8 presidency's agenda. I would indicate five. First, as I said, economic and financial crisis. Secondly, Africa and development. Third, climate change and energy security. Fourth, non-proliferation. Five, regional crisis with a particular focus on the region including Pakistan and Afghanistan. What about economic crisis? What is the lessons of the crisis? There is a governance gap that we have to fill as soon as possible. This is the first. That's why we urgently need a new set of rules for financial and economic governance. At a later stage, we will also need to reform the Bretton Woods institutions that were created, as you know perfectly, more than 60 years ago. I have to say, at least, they should be updated or dramatically changed. That's why our presidency, as I said, is working very closely in coordination with the British G8 presidency. We want to come up with the right response. We are confident and we are helping that the G8 summit in London will be able to put on the table some ideas and concrete proposals to make progress, to address the emergency of the current financial turmoil. It is crucial that Europe will go to the G20 with a coordinated position. This was the purpose of meeting which took place last weekend in Berlin and the extraordinary European Council this coming Sunday. In other words, some leaders were discussing, those who are part of G20, they met in Berlin. Today, the presidency announced during the Foreign Minister Council their intention, very right intention, to bring on the table of the Council at 27 member states all the issues that were under discussion in Berlin. This is the involvement not only of those who are part of G20 that will be discussing in London, but all 27 member states should have a say to contribute to the ongoing discussion. This is the right European approach. And then La Maddalena's meeting will come in July, after the April's London summit. Then we shall focus on the medium-long term, addressing the structural and long-term problems linked to the relaunching of the global growth. Not emergency issues, not just how to give a rapid response to the crisis, but how to relaunch in the mid-long term the sustainable and global growth. A first step was taken, as you know, at the G7 finance ministers. The meeting took place in Rome a few weeks ago, and the G7 countries committed themselves to agree on what they called a common set of rules and shared principles and standards on property, integrity, transparency of international economic and financial activity. So we do want a transparent system. We do want more accountability on the financial world. Most importantly, the G7 countries committed themselves to fight against protectionism. This is a key priority of Italy's G8 presidency. We cannot, absolutely, because of the economic crisis, to run the risk to fall into protectionism. That would be the wrong response to the financial crisis, to the economic crisis. Let me stress this point. We are particularly concerned about the protectionist temptations in some countries, particularly, I have to say, European ones. I'm not talking only about Buy American. I'm talking about risk to break the European rules of a single market, which is one of the greatest European achievements in the last 3 decades. Protectionism risks to unravel the EU and the very logic of interdependence that underpinned the evolution of EU over the last 50 years. We consider as a pillar what we call the 4 freedoms of European single market. These cannot be called into question. On the contrary, Europe should lead in the fight against global neo-protectionism. This is a flag we should have in hand. The second priority will be Africa and development. I've just been in Africa, in order to listen from the countries of this continent their expectations from our G8. African countries would expect from us 2 main things. First, to be engaged in the discussion of global issues. They rightly want to be players. I think we should consider Africa not as the problem, but as an opportunity. This is the right approach we should change. As a matter of fact, it is increasingly difficult to address global challenges without engaging Africa. Take, for example, energy security. I visited Angola and Nigeria, another 2 important countries. But Angola and Nigeria are amongst the leading oil producers in the world and major energy suppliers of US and China. Can you address, ladies and gentlemen, energy security without listening to them? I don't think so. This is just to take an example. We shall engage African countries also in the G8 ministerial meeting on aid and cooperation at the end of May in Pescara, that I will chair personally, as well as in the meeting at the level of leaders that will take place in Sardinia. The message Italy wants to send is the following. African countries are equal partners, and therefore our strategy towards them should be based on a bottom-up approach rather than a top-down one, as it has been mostly the case, unfortunately, so far. The second thing they want, they do not want to be forgotten by the current economic crisis. Italy's presidency wants to send another clear signal to this regard. A stable and sustainable growth of international economy cannot be achieved without taking into account the needs of developing countries and Africa. After all, it is mostly in the African continent that leaves the last billion of people marginalized from the global economy. Another point I want to stress on Africa. We need to complete the transition from a traditional approach based on fighting against poverty to a more sophisticated one based on sustainable development. We need to pay attention to all those factors such as investments, infrastructure, environment, education, and the development of human capital that make Africa's development sustainable. We also will strive to increase the awareness that development needs to be pursued by means of integrated approach involving all actors and all available means, not only official development assistance, but also investments, public-private partnership, innovative financing mechanisms, private foundations, and the active involvement of civil society. At the same time, the existing pledges in terms of development assistance must be reaffirmed, along with the concept of accountability. This path, as you all know, was embarked on last September at the conference in Accra and confirmed a recently ended Doha on development funding. The third priority is climate change and energy security. We want to provide a maximum political impulse to contribute to a positive outcome of UN negotiations. The recent approval by EU of a climate energy package is the best guarantee that Europe, not least through G8, will be capable of confirming its leadership, again another flag, in global negotiations on climate change ahead of Copenhagen Conference. Our aim is to propose that EU package be considered as a model towards the UN negotiations. Nevertheless, success in Copenhagen will also depend on the acceptance of comparable responsibilities by the other industrialized countries and commitments by the emerging countries. Think about America, China, and India, just to name a few. That's why the Italian presidency intends to foster the G8's leadership in the promotion of agreement on greenhouse gas reductions, including both industrialized and emerging countries, which is based on the principle of a common but differentiated responsibilities and respective capabilities. We also want to promote investments in renewable and low-carbon technologies. Energy security and climate change are strictly connected. That's why we need to make sure that environmental dimension is factored in the energy policies of both industrialized countries and emerging economies. We will also promote a comprehensive and structured dialogue between energy producers and energy consumers. Our aim is to try to stabilize demand, offer, and prices of oil and gas and other energy products. Number four, priority is non-proliferation. We need, I would say, frankly speaking, more aggressive approach to non-proliferation in order to strengthen the multilateral regime. This is the message that we intend to send. We cannot continue to deal with the challenge of proliferation on a case-by-case basis. We need a systemic and sustainable approach to non-proliferation. The point of departure is that today it has become much easier to proliferate, unfortunately. We face a potential cascade of proliferation, particularly in the greater Middle East. True, Iran is the most urgent challenge, but unless we adopt a systemic approach, we will face multiple challenges in the future. Proliferation concerns both state and non-state actors. Nuclear terrorism is no longer an abstract threat. The implications of these developments are very clear. What is our aim? It is to tighten our norms based on NPT regime and procedures for their enforcement. The NPT conference review, you know, will start in 2010, could provide the opportunity to make some significant breakthrough to this regard. For that to happen, we need a shared common commitment, first of all, from the United States and Russia. We particularly welcome the first positive signals that the new American administration is sending. We should also not forget the sort of linkage that Article 6 of the treaty, NPT, established between non-proliferation and disarmament. Don't forget disarmament, which is equally important. Any effort to strengthen the non-proliferation regime would therefore greatly benefit from the existing nuclear powers' commitment to reduce and gradually dismantle their nuclear weapons. Final, but as I said, as used to say, last but not least, finally, our G8 approach towards the regional crisis. Afghanistan is our main priority. 2009 will be a crucial year of Afghanistan. Think about the ongoing presidential elections. We welcome the American decision to engage in a comprehensive review of the current strategy. We need a much more sophisticated political strategy. Italy believes we should engage more actively the neighboring countries and other non-Western stakeholders, such as the Gulf states. This will be the main contribution that our G8 presidency intends to offer to the solution of Afghanistan and Pakistani region problems. Think about cross-border issues. Think about stabilizing the institution. Think about fighting drug trafficking, and so on, and so on. We are planning the organization of a regional meeting on Afghanistan this June with the participation of G8 countries, Afghanistan, Pakistan, India, China, Gulf states like Emirates, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Turkey. We also want to explore with our allies, first of all, I will speak to Madam Clinton this week in Washington about this, the possibility of involving Iran. Iran can be, if there will be from their side a good will, a good political will, a contributor, particularly in the fight against drug trafficking, which feeds the insurgents in the border region. What should be the objective of such meeting? We would like that the above-mentioned countries agree on a series of common commitments. Think about some kind of stability pact for the region as a whole, including Pakistan and Afghanistan, to control the borders, to fight against drug trafficking, to dismantle weapons trafficking in order to create a regional environment which could be conducive to the final stabilization of Afghanistan, which is our ultimate goal. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Foreign Minister. This was a very clear and very complete list of issues on the Italian's G8 agenda. And now we'll turn to my colleague Ashley Tillis, who has the tough task of commenting on all these issues. I just summarized them. There were five thematic priorities: the economic and financial crisis, the development in Africa, climate change, non-proliferation, regional crisis, especially Afghanistan being the last one. And there was another set of issues that the foreign minister started his presentation with, including the notion of engaging with emerging countries and building a more responsible global governance system. Ashley, I turn to you.
Thank you, Fabrice. It's an honor to be here and to speak after Minister Frattini has laid out the agenda for Italy's presidency. Everything that you said, sir, is sweet music to my ears, because it touches on the themes that I hope we in the United States will be able to help and support as you take the helm in these very difficult moments. I want to make the point that Fabrice started the session with, which is that I see the moment that we are locked into as a moment of great excitement, because we are in a historic transition that occurs in the international system about once every 100 years. We see today two transitions that are taking place simultaneously, whose consequences will remain with us long after we have departed the scene. The first transition that we are beginning to see is, for the first time, the emergence of a genuine global economic system. Globalization, which we have seen in waves before, partially, now becoming complete and now encompassing the entire globe, with consequences that we cannot quite comprehend. As part of this process of globalization, we see the rise of new players, new actors. And I think it was extremely appropriate for you to point and to start your presentation with the fact that what we are really grappling with is the issue of power transitions in the international system. And how can we adapt institutions which emerged from a different configuration of power to a new global order where you have new players who were not represented in the system before? I think this is going to be a challenge that we will have to address over several years. There's good news and there's bad news. The bad news is that this is going to take work and leadership. The good news is that the structural changes that are occurring in the international system are forcing the change. So while leadership will be essential to shape the direction of the institutions we seek to create, we must recognize that necessity is already pushing us in the direction of such change because we cannot escape it any longer. I'm going to very briefly comment on some of the five issues that you laid out before we open the discussion to the floor. On the question of the economic crisis, I think the single most important thing that we have to take away from the current economic crisis is the fact that it is important not to throw the baby out with the bathwater. The open international system has served us well. It is responsible for an unprecedented rate of growth in the global economy since 1945, which is unparalleled by historical standards. If you look at the fruits of this open economy since 1970, it has produced the rise of Asia, consequences of which we are coping with. The solution today, therefore, is not to jettison the institutions that have brought us progress, but rather to expand those institutions while still keeping an essential stability of the rules. This is our task on the external dimension. In the internal dimension, I believe, as nation states, we have to focus equally seriously on questions of internal renewal and on questions of maintaining adequate safety nets. Because globalization is going to produce winners and losers in our domestic politics. And unless we can create institutional arrangements that help the losers within our political systems to adapt to the changes that are taking beyond our national boundaries, it will be impossible for us to sustain the globalization that we seek in value. On the questions of Africa and development, again, here, I agree with you completely in terms of your priorities. Let me just flag another dimension that does not receive often adequate attention. It is very important, as we think in terms of the development efforts for the future, to think about those things that really contributed to the rise of the West. And that is institutions, markets, the rule of law, and transparency. Unless these institutional frameworks are built up in the modern Africa of tomorrow, much of the investments that we make in the continent run the risk of dissolution and waste. On the third question of climate change and energy security, our task will be made much easier if we look at the issues of climate change not simply as burdens for our economies and for our countries, but as fundamental opportunities for jump-starting a new wave of global economic growth. The fact that we are looking at less carbon-intensive economies offers us an opportunity to create new cycles of innovation. And with new cycles of innovation come new opportunities for progress, new opportunities for redistribution within our own societies. So I think it is incumbent on us, as we think of the issues of climate change and energy security, to think of these as opportunities to jumpstart new technological innovation. The fourth question on the issue of proliferation. This is going to be a far more difficult challenge than I think we appreciate. And it's a challenge that goes beyond specific problems of Iran and North Korea. It's fundamentally a question of how can we ensure the stability of the global non-proliferation regime at a time when there are fundamental changes in the global and regional balance of power, when technology has become extremely diffuse and distributed, and where the nature of the actors with access to high technology has changed very dramatically. So you're talking of systemic change in a very fundamental sense, and how one can cope with this kind of systemic change in terms of a set of rules that were designed essentially when nuclear weapons were entirely within the control of states is really going to occupy the best minds, I believe, for many, many years to come. On the final issue, which is the issue of regional security, and particularly the questions involving Afghanistan and Pakistan, I was personally delighted to hear you recommit Italy and the G8 presidency to reinforcing and strengthening our efforts in Afghanistan and Pakistan. I want to make just one simple point on this question. All of us have different ideas about what needs to be done with respect to dealing with this problem. But keep one thing in mind. At the end of the day, what happens in Afghanistan and Pakistan is not something that happens in a remote corner of the world. It fundamentally has a bearing on the safety and the security of our own homelands. And until we look at Afghanistan and Pakistan through the prism of protecting our own homelands, we will not be able to muster the political commitments required to stay the course. And so I think we have a challenge, both in the policy community and in the political leadership, of explaining to our peoples that the sacrifices that we are making in that remote corner of the world are not sacrifices that are made purely for reasons of altruism, but fundamentally out of self-interest. And if that particular premise is understood, we stand a better chance of being able to sustain the commitments that we've made. I want to end by simply wishing you all the very best for the term of your presidency and to offer you the months ahead. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ashley. I think you opened the discussion in a perfect way. So let me now open the floor and take some questions, maybe by a group of two or three questions, if you want to raise your hand and introduce yourself. Thank you. One here, the gentleman with the tie.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Daniel Bochkari of East West Institute, Brussels. A question for Mr. Frattini, Your Excellency. I would like to come back to a point you made on energy security and the necessity for building up a stronger dialogue between producers and consumers. And in the same time, you were mentioning the need of restructure in the whole international cooperation system. Do you see any? Would the Italian presidency put any specific proposal for making specific formal institutions which will, I mean, facilitate the dialogue between energy producers and energy consumers, and same relates to dialogue on the energy prices, especially the oil prices. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Another question maybe from the floor? No, I know there are some journalists, normally they're not really shy, but today maybe they're a bit tired after the council meeting. So I will add my own question, if I may, with regards to the last issue, Afghanistan and the regional dynamic, which is something that is very close to Carnegie Endowment. Ashley is a good symbol of that, and we have other experts in Washington. The question is, indeed, there is a need for a better and more constructive regional dialogue between the key countries surrounding Afghanistan. But how do you square the circle of triggering this dialogue whilst delivering a really making a difference on the ground? Because a dialogue can take years to solve actually some quite complicated political issues between the regional countries or also between countries like Iran and the US. But yet Afghanistan needs improvement this year and next year and not in a kind of 10-year outlook. So how do you square this circle? That was my question.
Okay, well, the first question, the answer is we don't think about creating a new body, a new agency, a new structure, something like this. We believe, and I think what happened during the recent crisis between Ukraine and Russia was very clear. There was, at that time, in the midst of the crisis, even uncertainty about the level of demand and offer coming to or coming from Europe, because a matter under discussion was how much gas was necessary to euros in these very days. And there was a different perception about volumes. So we don't have a clear permanent dialogue between producers and consumers. In this case, we were consumers, we European, and Russia was producer. Other example, in some cases, there are discussions about whether to envisage even another OPEC, not for oil, but then second open for gas specifically. That would be quite counterproductive, the multiplication of structures. What we need is a permanent dialogue between producers and consumers. That's why we will convene a meeting by getting involved not only the G8 partners, but all those who can be involved. As I said, African countries that are important oil producers can be and should be involved. Think about countries that I mentioned. Because, of course, if you want to have at the global level certainty about demand, offer, and, of course, try to stabilize prices, a permanent dialogue is necessary, because otherwise we look at wages and situation of uncertainty. But in any case, I don't think we have in mind creating an agency, a new body, a bureaucratic structure, and so on and so on. Nothing this kind. The second question, of course, it is a very difficult exercise, but now the time has come, in my view, to change dramatically, I would say, the comprehensive approach towards the region of Pakistan and Afghanistan, because probably we were convinced at the very beginning, when we defeated the Taliban's regime, that the military instrument was the only one necessary and sufficient to succeed. Unfortunately, we know that that is not the case. So I would say the answer to deliver, the answer can be articulated in three main areas. The first area where we should get results now is improving institutions. This is the first. This is the precondition. That's why, for example, Italy is very proud to be the first NATO contributor on training police and security forces in Afghanistan. Our trainers, our carabinieri, are the first group, because we believe that without a proper consolidation and improvement of the quality of people that work for the institutions, is simply impossible to succeed. And the same applies to magistrates, to judges, and so on. So improving institutions, that is also strengthening rule of law, because we were cooperating. And finally, on this, apparently, we fully succeeded, because Afghanistan adopted the constitution, they adopted the civil code, a criminal code, even a juvenile criminal code. But that is not enough, because we don't have enough judges and magistrates to implement the new legal framework. That's why improving institution means training people, and I would say, it's difficult to say, I wouldn't like the idea of imposing our model. Rather, we have to help people to change their minds. They are no longer belonging to a tyrannic system. This is what I mean when I talk about dramatic change. From inside, it's not possible to put on the table a pre-cooked solution we like very much, the European treaties, but we cannot put on the table, this is our treaty, take or leave it. This is simply not acceptable. So this is the greatest effort. Secondly, security. Because in Afghanistan, think about the cross-border issues. Security means preventing and fighting drug trafficking, fighting smuggling of arms and weapons. I would say avoiding tribal groups taking under control entire regions or provinces, or even worse, submitting them to the Sharia law that happened, unfortunately, recently under the permission of the Pakistani government in a province of Pakistan, which is, frankly speaking, a matter of concern. This is why security helps, but it is just an instrument. It's not the solution. And the third area where we can deliver is the civilian reconstruction. If we don't help the civil population to alleviate their sufferings, we cannot succeed. That's why I have to say, we are, again, very proud to be there in the province of Herat and to be responsible for many, many, many projects of cooperation, on building bridges, on building infrastructures, on helping to build hospitals or to take care of people that are sick. These are civilian reconstruction examples that are one element where we can deliver. So we can combine these efforts and to get all the neighbors involved. I know, for example, that Iran provides a lot of groups living on the borders with a lot of money. They provide people with a lot of money, but are they coordinated? They are not. This is the idea of involving a country which is a matter of fact, is our neighbor in Afghanistan. Italy is responsible of the province of Herat. 400 kilometers are at the borders between Herat province and Iran. Is it possible to ignore? So this is the idea. Dialogue, of course, but dialogue to deliver, and to deliver in these three main areas.
Thank you, Minister. I'm going to take another round of questions before closing. Yeah. The gentleman with the black tie over there, if you can introduce yourself. Thank you.
Yes. Sandro D'Angelo, European Parliament. I have a question for Minister Frattini that I thank for his very clear presentation. As regards to priority number 4, non-proliferation, could you please say more on the role that Italy will play in La Maddalena summit with reference to the Iranian regime? Thank you.
Thank you. And another and last question, the lady in the middle, The microphone is in your seat. Yeah.
Hi, it's Ilaria Maselli from SEPS. I have a question concerning the financial crisis. You said we should avoid protectionism, and this is fine, but this has been said since November, and still we had Sarkozy propose trying to help Opel. Can you be more precise about measures you're going to propose on this subject? Thank you.
Any other question? No. So we have two rather political questions that I'm sure you're going to...
Well, thank you very much. These are very important questions. Well, on Iran nuclear program, we will be, I hope, taking the opportunity to have a comprehensive non-proliferation strategy, also to relaunch what we should continue to call a double-track strategy vis-à-vis Iran on nuclear strategy. I think Iran has a strong interest, to me, to engage with the international community if we will be very firm, but in the same time fair and transparent vis-à-vis what we want to achieve. We want to achieve full transparency on the implementation of the nuclear program in Iran. That means not to prohibit any kind of nuclear activity for civil purposes, but in a spirit of full transparency, we do want an Iran open to inspections from the international institutions bodies. This is what we want to achieve, and in return, we should be ready to offer something to Iran in terms, for example, to engage Iran in a strategy of negotiations with Europe. You know that they had in the past the ambition to negotiate a free trade agreement between EU and Iran. So we have something to ask for and something to offer. But what is very clear, the other side of the coin is that if Iran will reject our proposal to engage in a broader context of renegotiating the NPT, Non-Proliferation Treaty, at international level in 2010, if they will reject any kind of positive offer to engagement, of course, we have to safeguard our credibility as international community. That means there are already sanctions to be implemented. That is very simple. So that's why I do want to say I do prefer Iran be part of the solution, being engaged. But it's up to them to decide. When I told Iran, we are exploring the possibility to get you involved on the exercise to stabilize Pakistan and Afghanistan, are you interested in case our partners will be in agreement? They said, we are thinking about it. That in itself, a not negative response, because they say, well, we are exploring the same opportunity. This is the strategy vis-à-vis Iran. So we will be in the same time very clear, but in the same time very transparent vis-à-vis what we want to achieve. On the financial crisis, well, it's very simple in theory. It's extremely difficult in practice. I give you an example. What I mean when I talk about protectionism is the temptation, for example, to put obstacles to the free movement of goods and people. Think what happened to the Italian workers working in the north of UK that were blamed for getting a legal job in UK. And fortunately, thanks to the rapid and very clear reaction of Prime Minister Gordon Brown, the situation was rapidly settled because we had right to get that job. But this was the symptom of a feeling which is a dangerous one. Start putting obstacles, because one day is UK, other day will be Spain, and the other Portugal, and so on and so on. This will be disaster. Other example. We said we believe that it's necessary to help all the sectors of industries that are in need to help, but without running the risk of protectionism. We said we understand by American, but we wouldn't like very much the idea of encouraging putting obstacles to goods. And that's why I think very rightly Madam Clinton went to China to reassure about the non-protectionist intentions of America, because of course China is the first country in the world which is concerned about trade barriers. That's why, despite some people criticize Hillary Clinton, I think she was right to pay her first visit to China and to send this very clear message that America is not falling in a new protectionist risk. In Europe, what does that mean? It means helping industry, but without breaking the rules of internal market. That is very simple. And now more than ever, we do need Lisbon Treaty in force, because we need strengthening European institutions, not breaking European institutions, not weakening. That's why in this very moment where people tend to forget the importance of strengthening European institutions, European Commission, what does it mean, European Commission? It means reaffirming that the great achievements of European single market has to be confirmed once again, exactly because there is the financial crisis, the economic crisis that puts at risk one great achievement like the internal market. Exactly because of this, we have to abstain from temptations to isolate member states and to say, buy Italian. That's not something I like.
Thank you very much, Minister, for these very open and candid remarks. And thank you for everybody for...
I clarify. I like very much by Italian, but not in the sense of protectionism. To be very clear, absolutely. I try to buy Italian when I can.
Okay, thanks a lot.